Second Easter Seminar Lecture. I teach, share, unconditional love. Unconditional love is the allness of the divine expressing. I live unconditional love, a living example to myself. I teach and share unconditional love. What does it mean to teach and share unconditional love from the point of view of leaving the birth canal? Well, we're still in the birth canal. We're still in the birth canal, but we're preparing to come out. Now, there are some people whose life experience will bring them back again and again and again to the birth canal. And these people have never trained themselves in preparation for coming out. And part of the training in preparation for leaving the birth canal is unconditional love. All of us think we like ourselves. And yet, that is not true. None of us like ourselves. For if we liked ourselves, we would only think the highest and best about ourselves. What do you think about yourself? If I say, you're wonderful, oh, don't say that, you know. If I say, that was very nice of you, you say, well, it's about time you give me a compliment, you know. And I say, well, it's so wonderful, you stay awake during my lectures, I enjoy that, you know. And you say, well, yeah, sure, mm-hmm. You see, when you don't like yourself, you create yourself having these experiences. When you like yourself, you create yourself being totally untouched, unaware, and uninterested in these experiences. When you like yourself, you can enjoy life, you can enjoy everything that goes on, you enjoy all the people in your world, and if they're there, that's wonderful, and if they're not there, that's wonderful. See, a person who really likes himself is a person who can go to a party and nobody comes, not even the hostess, and they're there at the party and they're invited. And they go into this lovely home where the hostess is not there and the party is not there and the people are, and it says right here on the card, this is it. So you as a guest go into this house and it said, make yourself at home. And you go into the house and you see a lovely jacuzzi there and a swimming pool, and you see there's no servants either. Nobody is attending anything there. But you are told to make yourself at home and be there. So you say, what the heck? And so you go in the kitchen and you get yourself a nice tall glass of cold milk and you take it out onto the patio by the swimming pool and you set it down and you take off your clothes. There's nobody there. And wow, this is neat. And so you jump into the swimming pool. You take a shower first because that's the way you've been trained to do. And so after you had your shower and jump in the pool, oh, you feel just so lovely. The water is just absolutely perfect. It absolutely makes you feel like you want to stay there forever and just float and float and float and float and float. And so then you get in the jacuzzi. And in the jacuzzi, it too is just that perfect temperature. It's hot, but it's that perfect temperature, and it makes your body just tingle all over, and you just stay in there for about 15 minutes, and you feel just so uplifted, so wonderful, and still nobody shows up, you know. And so you have your towel lying there, and you lie down, and you sort of lay in the sun and enjoy it. You don't even dry off because you don't have to. The sun is so lovely. And you are on one side for a half an hour, and then you turn over to the other side for a half an hour, you know, sort of turning on the spit, making sure you get a little tan on both sides. And then afterwards, you get up, and you decide to get dressed and go in the house and see what's going on. When you go in the house, and there is a giant screen television. It covers one full wall. It's just sort of hanging on that wall. And in front of the TV, you see this video. And the video says, Steps to Being Resurrected. And so you say, wow. And so you put the video in and you watch it. And then you see how the steps to being resurrected start out with one step. And that is, I like me. The step of recognizing that this is a divine being that you are. That you are not only wonderful, you are really wonderful. You are so divine, you are so perfect, you are so the allness. And then the video stops itself and says, if you want to continue, be ready for a big change in your life. If you want to continue, be ready for something very spectacular to happen in your world. And so you say, wow, why not? And so you press the continue button. And on the video screen comes this very beautiful person. And the person says to you, you are divine. You are wonderful. You are fantastic. You are the allness of the all. And then the very wonderful voice turns sour. And the voice says, God made a mistake in creating you. You really shouldn't be watching this video. You're not worthy of watching this video. You are an ugly person. You are a bad person. You are a person who should be shot at sunrise. You shouldn't be here. And you look at that and you say, what? And then you say, oh, whatever you say is fine. Has nothing to do with me. Because I don't choose to accept that sort of thing. I know that I am wonderful. I know that I'm good. And I know that I'm perfect. And so then the video says, it's an interactive video. And so the video says, you passed that test. Next, the video shows you a picture of a mother holding a little baby. And the little baby is just so content and happy in the mother's arms. And then the next video, the next scene, is some terrible animal grabbing the child out of the mother's arm and knocking the mother aside and taking the child and eating it totally. And you look at it and you say, well, that's an interesting way to do something. It has nothing to do with me. I see that child whole and perfect. I see that child beautiful. I see that child glorious. And all of a sudden, the interactive screen says, you made it. And the mother is holding the child whole and perfect. You didn't believe in appearances. You didn't believe in the illusions. The illusions were meant to be ugly and meant to be, but you were given the good illusion first, and then you were given the secondary illusion to see if, you know, you could be switched, if you could be moved into that. So then the next scene comes along, and there is a wise man sitting in his cave up on the side of the mountain, and they call him a sage or a guru. And you look at him sitting there, and he's very comfortable. He's dressed in his loincloth, and he's just sitting there enjoying himself. And then you look outdoors, and there's no door on this house. But you look outdoors, and there you see a blizzard blowing snow everywhere. Snow even comes in the doorway. Snow is cold. and the ice is forming all over everything. And the man's sitting there in his running club. And you look at the thing and you say, ooh, this is cold. And you're not even really there. You're watching it on video. But yet you feel the sensation of cold. And then you say to yourself, whoops, I almost fell in the trap. I am not what I see. I am not the vision that appears to me on the screen. I am the guru. And I'm sitting here perfectly comfortable, untouched by any of the elements outside, untouched by the heat or the cold or whatever may be around me. I am master. And so, again, the interactive screen says, you're good. You're good. You're okay. You're coming along just fine. Got a few more for you. And so then, you see, you cannot keep yourself from showing emotions that you really have. If you have the emotion of fright, if you have the emotion of revulsion, you know, if you have the emotion of tenderness and caring and sharing and so forth, you can't hide them. No matter how hard you try, your body language, your body physiology is going to show it, what your real feeling is to it. So, in the next scene, there is a very beautiful, saintly person in his white gown or white robe. And sitting on a throne in front of him, or on a chair, a big chair, is this woman. And she is wearing her white gown. And the man is standing down a couple of steps from her, and she is in on the throne. And so then she says, okay, you have almost made it into your heavenly consciousness. You've almost made it into your bliss, into your resurrection. You're almost there. You're almost there. But now before you get there, I'm going to take this swordsman, and he's going to slice you into pieces. And so the swordsman comes in and slices the man into pieces. And the woman is looking on nonplussed. And you're looking on, and your whole body is just revolting from it. It's just churning, and you think, that is terrible. And very real. Very real. You know it's on the screen. You know that it perhaps is not really not real, but you respond anyhow. So then this voice interacting from the screen speaks up and says, well, you didn't do too well there. Your humanness came right through. Your humanness came right out into the open and showed that you're not ready yet to enter into your bliss, to enter into your nirvana, to enter into the feeling of the resurrection. You're not ready yet. You're not ready yet. Back to the drawing board. Oh, but I'm so close, so close. Yes, you were close. That would have been the last test. That would have been the last test. That would have been the last test. And you look at this laughing interaction television and you say to yourself, that's not nice of you to laugh like that. And again, you blew it. And you could have been redeemed by not being touched by the laugh. You could have been released of that other experience by not having been touched by the laugh. But you were. You were. Now, you say to the interactive screen, oh, yeah. Well, when is my next test coming along? And the interactive screen says, oh, you blew it. You're spending eternity right here. You're spending eternity right here in the birth canal. You're never getting in and you're never getting out. You're just being there. And that's what some people call purgatory. But that's where you are. And so you say to yourself, there is no such thing as purgatory. There is no such thing as heaven or hell. There is no such thing as an interactive television, unless I create it. There's no such thing as anybody telling me that I can or can't do something. Because once I decide to do something, I can do it. Now, whether I would be more effective having done these things beneficially, or, you know, done these things without being messing up, that is true. That is true. So, you say to yourself, hey, no way. No way. I love every one of the people on the screen unconditionally. I did not possess them. I was touched to a degree by what they did. I was happy for them or sad for them. But that's their choice. As far as I'm concerned, I can release them. And then the interactive TV says to you, okay, unconditional love is the allness of the divine expressing. The interactive TV has unconditional love for you, and you have unconditional love for the interactive TV. How about that? Now, how do you get a benefit out of something that is an interactive TV, out of something which does not have a people standing in front of you or a circumstance standing in front of you? Well, the same thing. You can watch a movie and you can feel all the emotions of the movie when it's well done, well acted, well presented. And you can watch a movie and you can be untouched by it. You can be cold to it, if you will. Now, what is the best thing for you to do? Is the best thing for you to do to be unconditionally loving and be touched by the movie, or to not be touched? What's the most important thing for you to do? To be touched by the movie or not to be touched by the movie? What's the most important thing for you?
To be touched unconditionally loving.
And what's the most important thing for you?
To enjoy it.
To be touched. And what's the most important thing for you?
Being untouched.
Being untouched. Well, we got two untouched and two touched here. Now, who's going to go into the resurrection? If you are touched, you are possessed by it. If you are untouched, you are possessed by it. Because you could not say that you are untouched if you didn't know what you were untouched about. You follow me? You see, yes. If you are untouched, what are you untouched about? What are you untouched about? Yes?
But if I'm so unconditionally loving, then that is it.
She says, if she is so unconditionally loving, then that puts it on a different ballpark. Well, that's not true. The thing is, the movie is, you are. You either respond to the movie or not. Now, what do little children do when they see a bad scene coming onto the movie? They put their hands in front of their faces, close their eyes, or cover their ears, you know. Yeah. They want to have nothing to do with it. Now, is that being touched?
Oh, yes.
Very much so. Now, they think they're not being touched. How could you legally not be touched? How could you be in a position of not being touched at all? And there's one way that you can do it. Does anyone know what that way is?
I
As so long as the experience happens and you are aware of it and you judge it that you want to be touched or not touched, then you're under its control. But when you live your life so beautifully that no matter what you look at, you look at it with the eyes of the infinite presence, God, and you see it as an is, then you're not touched. You follow me?
Yeah.
So long as you see it as an is, without good or bad, right or wrong about it, you know, positive or negative, then you are untouched about it. But so long as you have any value to it, we like to see movies that have good values to them. Well, now we're touched by movies that don't have good values. And then we're judging that movie to see if it really does have good values once we're watching it. And we're saying, well, it's pretty good, pretty good, pretty good. But any movie that we watch that is going to sell to the people, it's going to be a movie that touches their hearts. It touches their hearts, usually in a very positive and a very uplifting and a very... what words could you say for that? In a very strong way.
In accepting what they see.
Yeah, it's an acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's an acceptance of what's going on in the picture. And of course, so long as you accept it, you're judging. Because you could not accept it. And again, if it's an is, then there's no judgment. Now, Ellen, I want you to go out and pick all the naughty pieces of grass out of our lawn and throw them away and tell the nice pieces of grass that they're nice pieces of grass and they can stay. Now, Ellen, what is your statement?
We have a perfect lawn.
My lawn is filled with nice pieces of grass. My lawn is filled with grass. My lawn is an...
Perfect.
And is...
Perfect.
No, it's not perfect. Perfect is a judgment.
Yeah.
My lawn is an is. My lawn is an is. Now, Ellen, have you gone out there and checked each one of those blades of grass to see whether they were good or bad?
No.
Do you look at them all and say they're just an is?
Yeah.
Do they give you a certain satisfaction?
Yeah.
Oh, they give you a satisfaction. Yeah, right away. You see, we have to be so careful when we're playing this game because we're so accustomed to having opinions, to having values, to having right and wrong, to having judgment. And as long as we have judgments, what have we got? We have possession. As long as we have judgment, we have the condition where we are not free beings. We are still possessed by our world. Now, we saw on the show the other night the little boy was asked to be a pirate and take on a pirate's name, and he wouldn't do it. He says, my name is Peter, and I like my name. I like Peter. Well, I would say, from one point of view, he was in an is standard. He did not say Peter was good. He did not say Peter was bad, except I like it. But what he meant was that I am Peter. That's my is. That's my identity. That's my reality. I am Peter. You know? And now, so I go saying, Dorothea. And I say, Dorothea. And then I'll say, hey, cutie. And then, you know, you go by that. And then I say, hey, princess, you go by that. And I say, hey, lover, you go by that. Then I say, hey, dog. And you say, if it's like Rex, it's okay. Yeah. But if I say, hey, you good-for-nothing son of a gun, you know, what are you doing over there? You say, you surely are not speaking about me. Moi, you know, not me. And you don't accept that. But the thing is, can that be an is too? When does it not become an is?
When
the minute there's judgment. The minute that there's a point of view that something can be good or bad. So we have to be very careful and train ourselves in this. Now, it is something we can train ourselves in. It is a pure talent that we can develop to utilize. Now, right now, it would be a very tedious thing for all of you to do, to train yourself in being the is. We have talked about it often. We have shared it often. We have told you often that being the is a super thing. Being the is does not have a lot of perks to it. You know what a perk is, special blessings. Being the is, nobody appreciates you, and nobody doesn't appreciate you. Being the is, nobody helps you, and nobody doesn't help you. Being the is, you belong wherever you are, and you belong nowhere. You see, being the is has a lot of ramifications to it. And if we can train ourselves to be the is, then we move into that vein. Now, unconditional love is not the is. Unconditional love is a condition of relativity. It is a love without any parameters to it, paradigms to it. It has no points of view to it. Unconditional love is what? Unconditional love is just the purest of love, regardless of whether the child is dirty or clean, or whether the people are nice or mean. It's just unconditional love in every glorious and super way. But no values. No values. How can a man build a house with unconditional love? No values. How can a woman select her mate or her partner with only unconditional love? No values. That's a tough thing. That's a tough thing. Have you ever tried to do something like that with unconditional love? When you try it, when you do everything you can to live in unconditional love, you find that your unconditional love is judging. Your unconditional love has values to it. Your unconditional love is good, 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 good. Your unconditional love is bad, bad, bad for other people who don't want you to have that good. So, you see, what is it you're going to say? How are you going to act about this? What is your attitude about love? What is your attitude about unconditional love? I think that if everyone on earth were an unconditional lover, that'd be quite nice. But very boring. Very boring. Because in the human point of view, humans like to do many things. They like to be responsive in many areas of their life. Now, a divine being is incapable of being unconditionally loving. Because a divine being just is. If a divine being were capable of any type of loving, what would happen?
It would not be human.
It would be human. It would not be free of the human attitudes. And this is where we fall into the trap. We fall in the trap that we want to get out of the birth canal. We want to be resurrected. But we haven't done our homework. Now, I told you the video where, or the illustration, where the man took his sword and chop, 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 chop the person to pieces. And you look at that. Now, at the crucifixion of Jesus, when he was put on the cross, and all these people were watching saying, go, 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 sling him up, y'all. Give him a tough time. They all were saying that. They weren't all followers of Jesus, that's for sure. Probably very few of them were, if any. And so, they saw Jesus being maligned, being mishandled, being hurt with the crown of thorns and everything. They saw that. They saw him being offered the sponge with vinegar on it. They saw all that stuff. And were they judging? Were they saying, he deserves it? If he's in prison, he must be guilty. If he's charged with something, he must be guilty. If Jesus is charged with doing these things, he must surely be guilty, you know? Are they judging? Did all of them go to the cross and see the same thing? How many people went to the cross experience and saw him resurrected then and there? Only the number of people who themselves were absolutely pure, who themselves were absolutely without flaw, who themselves were divine. Now, how many were divine? How many people there were divine? Of all, were his disciples there? We only hear of one. You know, where were all these 12 disciples? We know where Judas was, but the rest of them, we have no idea. They didn't come around at all. They didn't show around because they didn't want to get involved. Because they thought their Savior, their teacher, was being killed. And they didn't want any part of that. Now, did they really believe in their teachings? Did they really believe in the teachings that they were supposed to espouse? No. Why were they given the privilege of being part of the team and coming down through history as they have? Because they represent every man. The disciples represented all walks of life. They represented every man. And in representing every man, they were where every man would be when trouble came. When trouble comes to a gang, they either fight it together or they completely disappear, all of them. Very few people stand up when trouble comes. And the reason that they don't stand up when trouble comes is because they have not looked at it like an is. If they would look at trouble as an is, and say, how can you look at trouble like an is when you're always saying trouble is trouble and trouble is bad? No. Did Sybil Agabua see the people burning the cars? Did she call that trouble? She says, what is that to thee, follow thou me? She let that go. She let that thing take place. Oh, if Sybil wanted to, she didn't know it at the time, but if Sybil wanted to, she could have just done like the Pope, peace, and had every one of the young men at peace, and come into her office and talk to her, you know. But every one of the young men could have been at peace. She could have, in a moment, just said, all is in divine order. But you see, she did it for herself because that was the level of her consciousness. The level of her consciousness was for herself. Unto your own self be true. Is your level of consciousness for yourself? Are you at the point where you can say, all is and is? Quite interesting. Quite interesting. Because if you can't, then you have nothing going for you. If you can't, you're not close to that is consciousness. And the is consciousness is where we want to be. How many people are we going to have in our world who worship us, who think we're wonderful? And then when something goes awry, something goes wrong, how many of those people would be standing by us and saying, hey, I believe in you? Think about that. Think about the thousands of people who are backing up other people. I enjoyed one man's remark about Carly, our Carly friend, with Hewlett Packard. He says, Carly is a good woman. I came here from my other employment because of her, because I believe in her, and I still believe in her. Now, do you think that he was subject to the judgments that were being made about her? Not at all. Do you think that he is a master? Yes, he is. Do you think he's standing up for this woman because is some good going to come for him? Who knows? Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But the thing is, he has his job with the company yet, but he believes in this woman. He believes in her, and he believes totally in her. Is there any judgment? No. Did she help him specially? No. Did she do anything other than be who she was, and he admired that? Yes. Now, my point is not so much that man. My point is the hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands, of people who believe in that woman, how many stood up and said anything? How many stood up and said, she's good. She's good. The one man that we know about, perhaps others, but the one man. Now, was he judging, or was he looking at her as an is? Did he have enough information to put on her and say, she is a good woman because she really knows how to do it by this, da, 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 da? Or is he saying, she is a good woman, and I believe in her, period. She's my mommy. I don't need to have a reason to believe in her. I believe in her, you see. Now, what about you? Where do you stand on this? It's a good question. Very good question. But think about it. Think about it. When you have the opportunity to stand up for anything, are you standing up in opposition, or are you standing up in support, or are you just standing up saying, I believe? If you say, we should do this or we shouldn't do this, and you just stand up and say, I believe in us, that we make good decisions. I believe in us. And that's all. There's no judgment there. You just believe in us. You're not being given the opportunity to have your aspect of it. You're just believing that the is, and it's great. Yes. Can you walk in that direction? Can you walk in the direction of the is? Can you walk in the direction of the resurrection? You see, one of the things that happens when you leave the womb canal, you leave the birth canal, one of the things that happens is that you either make it or you don't. And you make it when you become one as the light that you see. The light's there. The light's glorious. The light's illuminating. But when you see that light, do you stand up for it? When you see that light, do you merely say, hey, all is in divine order? When you see that light, we can do that. We can see that light, and we can see it all in divine order right now. But are you ready for it? Are you ready to leave that canal? Are you ready to move into the light? And in moving into the light is so bright that you cease to be an entity. You are merely the allness. And that's the next step. And that's a wonderful step. But think about that. Because that's where you are. And that's who you are. And that's what you are. And it's a pretty exciting thing to be. So, my beloveds, think about that. That's lecture two of resurrection. We will come back after lunch for lecture three, which will be the first step into the light. So be ready for that. I love you. Yes. Say, I love you.